On Southern FM, you're listening to The Space Show.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
Welcome to Season 5 of our Planet Earth series, in which we look at how space technology is helping us understand our home planet. And we're all on tenterhooks for tomorrow, about 10:30 I think it'll be, for the launch of a satellite built by both India and the United States. First, let's hear Deepak Putrefu, who's the NISA science co-lead at the Indian Space Research Organization.
NASR is NASA ISRO Synthetic Aperture Radar. It is first of its kind observatory with two radars, one from Space Application Center ISRO and the other from JPL NASA.
And now we'll hear from Chaitra Rao, the NISA Project Director, also at ISRO.
NISR is NASA ISRO Synthetic Aperture Radar, but for me, I think it's a beautifully handcrafted work that is being jointly developed by two different agencies across the globe on right opposite sides of the world. It will be able to map the entire globe in 12 days, and it is going to repeat its path every 12 days and give a systematic coverage of the entire globe. This collaborative programs are definitely a testimony on how the world can work together and work towards the betterment of the world.
The NASA side of this project is handled by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and they prepared this feature about what NISAR will do. Now, I should explain that NISAR, N-I-S-A-R, stands for NASA ISRO Synthetic Aperture Radar. Let's take a listen.
With NISAR, we're tracking the changes of the solid Earth and how it's moving. Ecosystems, ice cover, and any other thing that's changing at the scale of a centimeter on the Earth in a way that we've never been able to see before. Because of these very subtle motions we can measure, we're able to understand what's happening below the surface of the Earth at great precision. We can see subsidence, and that allows us then to manage resources of what's happening below the Earth.
Scientists want to study the movements of the Earth's surface to understand the processes that could trigger earthquakes, volcanoes, and landslides.
And that allows us then to understand risks associated with natural hazards,
which in turn can help in mitigation measures and early response. Other changes over the Earth's surface include melting of glaciers and ice sheets, changes in forest biomass, soil moisture, and shoreline changes.
It's based on radar, so it has two different frequency radars, and it basically looks through clouds and sees the surface of the Earth. What you're seeing is an animation of how the radar collects data, and you can see these beams coming down from the antenna and coming back, and on the ground you can see the swath, and that's where it collects the data, and when it combines them all together, you get what we need for the science.
We can see day and night through clouds, and we're covering all of the land and all of the ice-covered surfaces of Earth every week. NISAR is quite unique in that it has two radars, one provided by NASA, one provided by ISRO, the Indian Space Research Organization.
NASA and ISRO have collaborated in this mission. Till last year we were there at JPL NASA, where the radars got integrated and tested and were shipped back to India. And now the spacecraft is getting integrated with the instruments and they are being tested together. NISAR is going to be launched from Sriharikota, which is a ISRO launch pad, and it is going to be launched by GSLV Mark II. So we are just looking forward for the launch of NISAR in the forthcoming year.
NISAR is measuring the changes on the Earth's surface, which are either factors or indicators of climate change. The society will also immensely benefit due to its contribution towards disaster management and providing food and water security.
these things are global problems that the global community needs to come together to resolve.
Now it looks like we are no more belonging to two different worlds, and we all belong to the space community. That's it.
There's the excitement about what we are going to learn that we didn't even anticipate we were going to learn.
And Wendy Edelstein is the NISA Deputy Project Manager at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
It's based on radar, so it has two different frequency radars, and it basically looks through clouds and sees the surface of the Earth. The data from NISA is open source. It will be free to everyone.
And Paul Rosen is the project scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
So we can see motion of volcanoes. We can see motion of earthquake faults before the earthquakes actually occur. We can see subsidence due to groundwater extraction or oil extraction. So because of these very subtle motions we can measure, we're able to understand what's happening below the surface of the Earth at great precision. And that allows us then to understand risks associated with natural hazards. It helps us manage resources of what's happening below the Earth. The changes in the ice sheets, the changes in global forest cover, hazards around the world due to earthquakes, volcanoes, even flood-related hazards. These things are global problems that the global community needs to come together to resolve. It's inspiring to see the way people work together, both at NASA and at ISRO, both sides of the Pacific, basically on opposite sides of the world, working day and night for this mission to come together.
And we're expecting that launch, very exciting one, from India on a GSLV, a geostationary satellite launch vehicle, and it should be quite good, provided it doesn't do what the ERIS did. Now, the Indian rockets are now pretty good. And this is the Space Show.
Earth below us. Drifting, falling, floating, weightless.
A major environmental satellite has failed, according to the operators of MethaneSat. In a statement headlined, and I quote, "Core mission to turn methane measurement data into action will continue," Methane LLC wrote the following in late June.
On Friday, June 20th, the MethaneSat mission operations lost contact with MethaneSat. After pursuing all options to restore communications, we learned this morning that the satellite has lost power and that it is likely not recoverable. While this is difficult news, it is not the end of the overall MethaneSat effort or of our work to slash methane emissions. Launched in March 2024, MethaneSat had been collecting methane emissions data over the past year. It was one of the most advanced methane tracking satellites in space, measuring methane emissions in oil and gas producing regions across the world. The mission has been a remarkable success in terms of scientific and technological accomplishment, and for its lasting influence on both industry and regulators worldwide. The engineering team is conducting a thorough investigation into the loss of communication. This is expected to take time. We will share what we learn. Thanks to MethaneSat, we have gained critical insight about the distribution and volume of methane being released from oil and gas production areas. We have also developed an unprecedented capability to interpret the measurements from space and translate them into volumes of methane released. This capacity will be valuable to other missions. The advanced spectrometers developed specifically for MethaneSat met or exceeded all expectations throughout the mission. In combination with the mission algorithms and software, we showed that the highly sensitive instrument could see total methane emissions, even at low levels over wide areas, including both large sources, super emitters, and the smaller ones that account for a large share of total methane emissions, which were not visible from space until MethaneSat. Environmental Defense Fund and MethaneSat remain firmly committed to our core purpose of turning data into action to protect the climate, including reducing methane emissions from the global oil and gas industry. We will be working with partners around the world to leverage the algorithms and associated software, as well as the now-proven high-precision technology that was developed as part of the MethaneSat mission, so the world has access to high-quality, actionable greenhouse gas emissions data on a global basis. We will continue to process data that we have retrieved from the satellite, and we'll be releasing additional scenes of global oil and gas production region-scale emissions over the coming months. To solve the climate challenge requires bold action and risk-taking, and this satellite was at the leading edge of science, technology, and advocacy. We also will continue to work closely with our partners to reduce methane emissions and implement the goals of the Global Methane Pledge, the Oil and Gas Decarbonization Charter, Oil and Gas Methane Partnership, the United Nations Environment Program's International Emissions Observatory and Climate and Clean Air Coalition, and so many other efforts this mission was designed to support.
On July the 2nd, the deputy head of the New Zealand Space Agency, Andrew Johnson, issued this statement.
In a statement issued today, MethaneSat LLC, owners of the MethaneSat satellite, advised contact with the satellite was lost on the 20th of June and attempts to restore communication have been unsuccessful. The statement confirmed that the satellite has now lost power and it is likely unrecoverable. Clearly, this is a disappointing development. As those who work in the space sector know, space is inherently challenging, and every attempt, successful or not, pushes the boundaries of what we know and what we are capable of. New Zealand has been a partner in the MethaneSat mission since 2019, which is a collaboration with the US-based Environmental Defense Fund. While the mission's primary focus has been detecting and measuring global oil and gas emissions, New Zealand's involvement extended the focus to a science program to investigate the detection of methane emissions from agriculture and other sources. New Zealand's involvement in this mission reflects our commitment to advancing science, fostering innovation, and contributing to global knowledge. It has strengthened our expertise and space capability as a country. The Mission Operations Control Center at the University of Auckland's Te Ipanaha T-Space Institute is currently being used to monitor and operate the university's satellite TPA-1 launched on the 23rd of June. The institute will continue to be used as a training facility and has positioned New Zealand well for taking on future missions. Earth Sciences New Zealand, formerly NIWA, also has a wealth of agricultural data to work with. During its lifetime, MethaneSat made 97 measurements over agricultural targets around the world, across a range of different farming systems. This includes 13 measurements over New Zealand. Emissions maps, ground-based methane observations and aircraft data funded through this project will shed light on New Zealand's methane emissions independent of the satellite.
Earlier this year, on March the 7th, some results from MethaneSat had been announced.
New MethaneSat collections show wide variation in methane emissions across 12 different oil and gas-producing regions globally and demonstrate the valuable role that satellites play in regularly monitoring methane across multiple sectors and areas. Over time, MethaneSat data will inform strategies that lead to greater methane reductions. Across these most recent observations, MethaneSat measured approximately 1,300 tons of oil/gas methane emitted per hour. That is about $200,000 per hour worth of natural gas. These data also show how smaller, dispersed sources of methane, largely undetected by existing satellites, in aggregate contribute to a significant share of total emissions across regions. A recent study observed the majority of U.S. methane emissions come from smaller sources that emit less than 100 kilograms of methane per hour. The latest images show how a region's methane footprint can fluctuate significantly. For example, on July 5, 2024, the MethaneSat instrument detected 203 tons of methane emitted per hour in the AMU Darya Basin in Turkmenistan. An observation over the same area collected October 15, 2024, revealed the locations of areas with high levels of methane appear to change. Repeat observations will provide stakeholders with valuable insights to design mitigation strategies that prioritize areas where high levels of methane are continually detected. MethaneSat's comprehensive, precise emissions data will be essential for understanding global methane emissions from oil and gas basins, serving as the foundation upon which additional datasets and analytics can be layered on top. This will enable operators to get the full picture of their emissions and benchmark their performance with others. The oil and gas sector is one of the largest sources of global methane emissions and methane SAT observations target regions where approximately 80% of the world's oil and gas is produced. However, analysis of the underlying infrastructure can also identify other potential sources of methane emissions. Developed by Environmental Defense Fund with support from the Bezos Earth Fund, MethaneSat's comprehensive accounting of total methane emissions identifies where emissions are coming from, how much is being emitted, and how those emissions change over time. MethaneSat data is free and publicly available at data.methanesat.org.
That website again is data.methanesat.org. And MethaneSat is just is like methane, I guess, with S-A-T on the end. It's one word, all lowercase. So data.methanesat.org to see the real data from that wonderful satellite that seems to have now failed. Well, two satellites to study our planet's magnetosphere were launched last week by the same Falcon 9 rocket that launched those five Australian Skycraft satellites. This feature from the Goddard Space Flight Centre explains the objectives of the Twin Tracers satellites.
Earth is constantly bombarded by the solar wind. Waves of dangerous charged particles from the sun traveling at speeds over 1 million miles per hour. Our planet's magnetic shield, the magnetosphere, protects us from the brunt of this technology-imperiling force. But high above each of Earth's poles, there's one vulnerable spot in this shield, where solar wind is funneled straight down toward Earth and our technology, the polar cusps.
These solar wind energies can negatively impact power grids, radio communications, satellites, and even astronauts, which is why understanding its mysteries and its pattern is key to protecting our future.
To better understand these space weather effects, NASA is launching a new mission called Tracers. The two spacecraft will travel through the polar cusps to take groundbreaking measurements of magnetic reconnection, a process that occurs when the solar wind drags the sun's magnetic field into Earth's.
When the sun and Earth's magnetic fields collide, there's a tremendous energy release. The magnetic field lines snap and reconnect, creating new field lines. This process, known as magnetic reconnection, sends highly energized particles in new directions, including down toward the Earth. Reconnection is very difficult to observe directly because it occurs on small scale compared to the vast size of Earth's magnetosphere.
Magnetic reconnection happens in various places throughout the magnetosphere, but it is most easily studied at the polar cusps. When the solar wind slams into Earth's magnetic shield, it's here at the cusps that the impacts reverberate. By flying through the polar cusps, tracers will be able to directly study the signatures of magnetic reconnection, helping scientists better understand and prepare for the impacts of space weather on Earth.
As we understand that and are able to model it, we're able to get more accurate in terms of how we protect against it and then what we are doing in order to mitigate those risks.
Scientists have caught a glimpse of magnetic reconnection in the polar cusps before, giving us clues about this process. NASA's Trace 2 was one such mission that launched a pair of sounding rockets briefly through Earth's northern polar cusp in 2018.
Trace took really good data, one low flyer, one high flyer, and it took a snapshot of the Earth system in one state. It proved that these instruments can make this kind of measurement and you can get this kind of science.
The only thing we could not do with Trace, of course, was to make the measurement multiple times.
One snapshot doesn't tell you how the whole Earth system is going to behave, particularly under all the variation that the solar wind brings us. A long-standing problem with space physics research is if this is the Earth, you fly a satellite through the physics you're looking at, and you see something. and then it comes around in orbit later, and you see something different.
Building on Trice 2's legacy, two Tracer spacecraft will take multiple measurements at the polar cusps by flying in rapid succession, less than 2 minutes apart.
And so with these two spacecraft flying together, we can address this long-standing problem of trying to understand whether the signature that we see of a process called reconnection, when it changes, is that due to something turning on or off? Or is that just that we're flying from one region to another, and so we see a change as we transition through that region? People have tried to solve this problem with various combinations of spacecraft, but without two dedicated spacecraft, it remains an open question as to what's going on.
As the two Tracer spacecraft chase each other around Earth, they'll take a record-breaking 3,000 measurements of magnetic reconnection in the first year alone. These new observations will help scientists better understand and ultimately help defend us and our technology from the impacts of solar wind on Earth.
So not only will it get a global picture of reconnection in the magnetosphere, but it's also going to be able to statistically study how reconnection depends on the state of the solar wind. This is going to really help us understand how to predict space weather in the magnetosphere.
If we can understand in these various different situations, whether it happens suddenly, if you have one particular kind of event, it happens in lots of different places, then we have a better way to model that and say, here is the likelihood of seeing a certain kind of effect that would affect humans.
And you're listening to The Space Show, and we're looking at planet Earth and the important things there. Now, there's a satellite that was launched some years ago. It's called SWOT. It was launched in December of 2023 on a mission to provide a new view of water on land, at the coast, and at sea. Operated by the space agencies of France and the United States, SWOT, S-W-O-T, is formally called the Surface, Water, and Ocean Topography. Since its launch, SWOT has been measuring the height of nearly all water on the Earth's surface. This included flooded areas, showing not only the extent of the floodwaters, but also their depth. For example, in February of 2024, a series of atmospheric rivers drenched California with record amounts of rainfall and gale force winds. SWOT was able to measure the flooding, and some coastal areas were flooded by both ocean tides and heavy rain, while others were flooded only by precipitation. The water levels are measured by sending radar signals from the satellite and measuring the reflected radio waves. Charles Webb is the Associate Director of Flight Programs at the Earth Science Division at NASA headquarters. He had this description of SWOT.
So one of the unique things about the SWOT mission was the way in which we chose to actually build the entire observatory. It was done in two key pieces. One of them was done at JPL with contributions from CNES. They provided a radio frequency unit as well as the Nadir altimeter, and the Canadian Space Agency, which provided high power amplifiers for the wide swath radar that JPL was integrating. The goal there was to take all of those components and integrate the payload at JPL, do full up environmental testing following the assembly of the payload there, to do that testing there so that we put a lot of the risk behind us. And then once we take that integrated payload, we shipped it to France, to our partners at Thales Alenia Space, and they integrated it to the spacecraft that they are building. That complete observatory now is what is being tested at the facility in Cannes. And that will be shipped back, once all that testing is complete, will be shipped back to the United States for launch aboard a Falcon 9 and SpaceX.
As I noted, that launch has now taken place and it is working well. And I do wonder how it has been measuring the floods in Texas and, of course, the floods here in Australia, like in Queensland. Well, this has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie on the Mission Control way back on Earth. Yes, a long, long way away is Richard. Thank you, Richard.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.